are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, September 27th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Mehdi Hasan, senior contributor and columnist at The Intercept, host of the Deconstructed podcast there, also a presenter and interviewer on Al Jazeera English. Also on the program today, impeachment heats up. So, of course, Democrats go home on break. However, a majority in Congress now signed on for impeachment. Not a majority of Democrats. A majority of members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Meanwhile, public support for impeachment grows. Can you imagine? Exactly. It's almost like if you build it, they will come. Trump jokes about killing the whistleblower. And no joke, Donald Trump slashes refugees cap from 110,000 in 2016 down to 18,000 refugees we will be allowing in the country. Maximum. Also on the program today, Eugene Scalia confirmed as Labor Secretary. Yeah, that's Scalia. And the insider trading, charter flight taking, corrupt Tom Price drops into the Georgia Senate race. Meanwhile, the bipartisan Cannabis Banking Act held up by Mitch McConnell. Can you imagine? No legislation was supposed to pass, and it's Mitch McConnell that's stopping it. Meanwhile, in New York State, Governor Nixon Cuomo extends the New York registration deadline to February 14th. Thank you, Governor Nixon.
Got to change that chyron.
Employer-provided health care coverage passes $20,000 a year. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, everybody in here is getting a new car, except for you're not. And mortgage lenders are now pricing in climate change. All this and more.
Just sell your house.
Program.
Exactly. Just sell it. Sell it.
Super easy. Oh, and I forgot this one too. I didn't make it into my stack by mistake, but I had read it. Total bedlam at Fox News right now, as you can imagine. But we will get to that. We will get to that later in the program. Let's just start with what happened yesterday. There was a hearing, House Intelligence Committee. There was one in the Senate as well in the Intelligence Committee. However, it was only for it was closed door. And Joseph McGuire, the acting director of National Intelligence, brought to the committee to explain. And this was they ultimately before he came in, they released the mock-up of the transcript of the phone call. We know it's not the actual phone call because we know what happened to the actual transcript of the phone call. It was locked away in one of the highest security computer vaults, essentially, that the American government has. Even though this, of course, had very little to do with national security. But they did so because they knew what the president was doing was highly illicit. Joseph McGuire received this whistleblower complaint, which we now know was from a someone working within the CIA who had heard in the context of multi-agency discussions all of these things which pointed to the president of the United States leveraging his power to receive from a foreign government a contribution in kind, as we call it. This would be a free gift as to manufactured dirt on someone he anticipated might be his political opponent. McGuire is being asked by Adam Schiff, why didn't you bring us the complaint? And McGuire had two answers. One is, well, I didn't think it was urgent. And that's a statutory obligation to bring it to Congress if it was urgent within 7 days. And he didn't think it was urgent. Fair enough. But then he decided unilaterally, well, there may be executive privilege issues. So even though this is a complaint against the White House, I'm going to see if the White House thinks it's appropriate for me to give it to you.
We went to the White House first to determine, to ask the question.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know is chronology. So you went to the White House first. So you went to the subject of the complaint for advice first about whether you should provide the complaint to Congress.
There were issues within this, a couple of things. One, it did appear that it has executive privilege. If it does have executive privilege, it is the White House that determines that.
Pause it. Now, I should say, throughout this entire situation, McGuire says, like, I'm not a lawyer. He can't. Apparently, the only thing that this guy knows about the law is that it appeared to have executive privilege.
It is the White House that determines that. I cannot determine that as the Director of National Intelligence.
But in this case, the White House, the president, is the subject of the complaint. He's the subject of the wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. Were you aware when you went to the White House for advice about whether evidence of wrongdoing by the White House should be provided to the Congress, were you aware that the White House counsel has taken the unprecedented position that the privilege applies to communications involving the president, when he was president, involving the president when he wasn't president, involving people who never served in the administration, involving people who never served in the administration even when they're not even talking to the president? Were you aware that that is the...
What happened? Something froze. Well, he goes on to basically, he's making the argument here, just pop it back up and continue to play here. He's making the argument to McGuire, like, when you brought this over there, were you aware of the fact that they have deemed that just about everything executive privilege, even when he was not the chief executive, even when he was just a private citizen?
President, involving the president, when he was president, involving the president when he wasn't president, involving people who never served in the administration, involving people who never served in the administration even when they're not even talking to the president. Were you aware that that is the unprecedented position of the White House you went to for advice about whether you should turn over a complaint involving the White House?
Mr. Chairman, as I said in my opening statement, I believe that everything here in this matter is totally unprecedented, and that is why my former directors of national intelligence forwarded them to you, whether or not it met urgent concern or whether it was serious. This was different. And to me, it just seemed prudent to be able to check and ensure as a member of the executive branch before I sent it forward.
All right. My sense after watching all of this is that Joseph McGuire is a guy deeply, deeply in over his head. And he didn't know what to do. Now, this is a guy who has had, if you're into that type of thing, a stellar career in the military and special ops over many, many years, who I think has a sincere belief in public service in the way that he has gone about it. I think he has integrity in that respect. But here's a guy who was a deer in the headlights when he got hold of this. And if anything, what this speaks to is a problem in our culture. Because if your first instinct when you're panicking, when you get the whistleblower complaint about the president of the United States, is to think, I've got to give the president of the United States an opportunity to protect himself. and involved with executive privilege here, as opposed to, I should give this to Congress because this is the inspector general who I respect and think has done their job in a fair and competent way, says this is red alert. Then you go with the process. I mean, he spent a lot of time saying, I took 11 oaths to the office under the Constitution. Well, in this instance, then you go with the process. You don't freelance and say, hey, I'm not qualified to make any decision other than the White House might want to call this executive privilege. Now, maybe had they done that, he would have leaked it in some other way, or I don't know. But working through this on those hearings is exactly what we should see day in, day out over the coming months. I don't know that we will, and I have a feeling that Mehdi might have something to say about that in a moment. Before we take a break, I want to tell you support today for today's show comes from Mova Globes. Heard me talk about these. I have it right here. Maybe sometimes you've noticed lately. I'm over there playing with the globe a little bit. These things turn all on their own. They, with or without a base, in my instance, I have a little plexiglass base. You can put them in any setting. They do great in any type of lighting situation. No batteries are needed. There's no cords or anything like that. Hidden magnets provide the movement. They have 40 different designs, which includes like world maps, historical world maps, outer space. They have some famous artwork globes, something for everyone here. The outer space collection even has a graphic that's provided by NASA. I think they also have a globe too that looks like the Earth from space.
That's extremely cool.
But they also have like Pluto. They got Uranus. I got a six-year-old kid, so whenever I bring up Uranus,
no, that
now,
holds
it's
up.
Ridiculous.
That's still funny.
It's still funny.
Yeah, don't pretend you've matured out of that.
No, I haven't, but yes. I generally do pretend. They got one that traces the voyages of Captain James Cook, three different voyages all around the world. They got other vintage maps, and when you go back, you see like it's fascinating to see like, oh, there was no Antarctica when James Cook went around the thing, the planet, you know, that thing. They have Van Gogh, they have Monet artworks. There's one of Mars, which is pretty cool.
I can plan out my communist space colony.
You could. Like I say, these are awesome as gifts, awesome to have around the house, awesome to have on your podcast desk. Even if your son is telling you it's time to bring it home, you can visit www.movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 10% off your purchase. That's movaglobes.com/majority. Use the code majority for 10% off your purchases. Quick break. When we come back, Mehdi Hasan. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program senior contributor and columnist at The Intercept, host of their Deconstructed podcast, also a presenter and interviewer on Al Jazeera English. In fact, you just had Julian Castro on, and I guess you didn't necessarily plan to talk about impeachment probably when you booked him. But Mehdi, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So let's you wrote a piece in The Intercept, which I think captures my frustration at this moment. But before we get there, it appears that after the first hearing yesterday, which I think one could argue would be what should be a series of testimony, I should say, regarding impeachment, regarding the whole Ukrainian question. It sounds like Nancy Pelosi is still going to have Congress take a vacation for 2 weeks.
You know how important vacations are for politicians, Sam. It's very important, even in the middle of the biggest political crisis of 2019.
I mean,
my Sorry. Go
no,
on.
No, please go.
No, I was going to say, I mean, look, I'm torn on this. On the one hand, obviously, you know, I'm not going to come here and defend people taking vacations in the middle of, like, as, you know, as fascists and racists take over the country. On the other hand, I am slightly worried about the reports coming out this week. This is why I wrote the Intercept column about the idea that they want to get this all done and dusted quickly so they can get back to, I don't know what, infrastructure week. They want to get this impeachment vote done. They want to narrow it down to Trump's dealings on Ukraine and Biden. They want to get it on the floor, vote it, and send it over to the Senate. And that's a problem for me because I think you only get one shot at impeachment, and that one shot needs to cover everything Trump's done that's impeachable, which is a lot of stuff, Sam.
Well, I am so baffled by this. I mean, I understand it insofar as, like, you know, Pelosi did not want to do this. I think it was, you know, and Ryan Grimm over at The Intercept wrote a piece that showed sort of that the long journey to this impeachment. And largely it seems that a lot of those frontline Democrats, when they went home in August, heard from their constituents, like, you got to impeach this guy. And this, of course, was before the Ukraine stuff.
Remember what they were saying? Nobody wants impeachment. The public doesn't want impeachment. Well, number one, your base wants impeachment. And why is it only the Republican Party cares about what their base wants? Why does the Democratic Party never care what its base wants? And now you're looking at the polls that are out this week in the first 48 hours after, you know, the transcript has come out of the phone call, the whistleblower complaint. You're seeing the polling already shifting. Already. So, you know, those of us who said public opinion will move as leadership is shown, I think we've already been vindicated in the space of 48 hours. I think over the space of the next 3 to 6 months, we'll be vindicated further.
And I would say this, that not only is the polling moved by 7 points, but there was a Business Insider had a poll that shows that not only do people, you know, we have 43% now saying that he should be impeached. But when you look at this polling, 38% think an inquiry is the right thing to do and will help Democrats electorally. 19% think an inquiry is the right thing to do, but will hurt Democrats electorally. So even though those numbers, only 43%, should be done, a lot of that hesitation is a sort of like a, you know, the American voters, you know, pundit saying, like, I don't think this is going to be good politically.
Which is one of the biggest problems we have in politics right now, especially on the left and the center left, is every voter thinks that they are some sort of pundit or pollster or, you know, player in the game. So, for example, if you look at the presidential primaries right now, you ask people, who do you think should be the candidate? Joe Biden. Is it because you love Joe Biden? Nope. It's because I think Joe Biden is the person who's going to beat Donald Trump. Well, you don't know that. You're just going with the crowd and, you know, you're going with conventional wisdom, which is very much wrong in this case, I would argue. Similarly, on impeachment, do you want to impeach Trump? Of course. He's you know, if he's not worthy of impeachment, who is? But why aren't you backing it? Oh, well, I think it will hurt Democrats come next year because the Senate will never vote for it. So there's all this conventional wisdom doing the rounds, which a lot of Democratic voters have wrongly imbibed, in my view. I think they're wrong about Biden. I think he's the candidate who is most likely to deliver a Trump second term. And I think they're wrong about impeachment. We forget so quickly that Bill Clinton was impeached. He was not removed from office. And yet the Republicans won the White House in 2000, less than 2 years later.
Right. And I mean, I want to interrogate just a little bit more because I think what it is. And look, I saw this after 8 years of Reagan Bush, the sort of the fear and exhaustion that Democrats had. And they were, you know, the huge sigh of relief when Clinton got in. I saw this after George W. Bush, at least in 2004, where there was this sort of like notion we got to go with some type of safe choice. There is a fear. I mean, and, you know, I think it's a legitimate fear that Donald Trump will win re-election, that the Democratic leadership fails, it seems to me, to project any type of strength or confidence in any situation. And that sends a cue to the voters as well.
Exactly. I think you're right about the cues. And, you know, as I wrote in my Intercept column yesterday, I quoted the famous Israeli foreign minister on, you know, his put down of the Palestinians at the UN, that the Democrats never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. This is a huge opportunity now, the chance to impeach a president with a legitimate cause, not the kind of spurious impeachment that the Republicans did against Bill Clinton, but a very legitimate impeachment, which even, you know, some Republicans, a tiny handful of Republicans, Republicans, like Justin Amash, who is a Republican, even though he's left the party, have said there's a very clear case for impeaching him over Mueller. 1,000 former federal prosecutors, including many who served under Bush and Reagan, have come out and said, yes, impeach him over obstruction of justice. And I think you'll see more, you know, starting to peel away. Not many, but you'll see some. And that's a problem when the Democrats themselves don't want to show that leadership. I think there was somebody made a gag earlier this week. You know, William Weld, former Republican governor of Massachusetts, who's running against Trump in the primaries, if the Republicans even allow primaries. Right. He's trying to challenge Trump. He said Trump should be executed for treason, which is, I think, ridiculously over the top. But isn't it ironic that a Republican guy is calling for the execution of Trump while Nancy Pelosi, up until Tuesday, 4 o'clock, didn't even want to impeach the guy?
And now, so, okay, so now she doesn't want to impeach him, but then she makes the decision, all right, we have to go through it. What is the rationale that if we do this really quickly, like, what, I mean, like, I don't understand what the theory is here. Like, I can understand, like, I don't agree with it, but I can understand why she was afraid of it. But it's like, what's the argument? Well, we impeached him, but we did it really quick. Like, I don't get.
I'll be honest, I don't understand the theory either, because I was having a conversation with a colleague who was reading my piece. And who said, you know, well, what do you want? You know, what's wrong with just getting him? It's a slam dunk. Do Ukraine. Be done with it. You win the vote. The public are on board. And I said, well, you have to take a step back and ask, what is the point of impeachment? Exactly. For me, there's only two purposes to impeachment. Number one, to morally draw a line in the sand and say, this is wrong for the sake of history. With one eye on history, you say that we did not sit silently while this neo-fascist, you know, abused children at the border and obstructed justice on a daily basis and enriched himself at the U.S. taxpayers' expense and involved himself in campaign finance crimes in front of our eyes. All of the many impeachable offenses that he's done. We didn't sit quietly. We drew a line in the sand. We impeached him in the House of Representatives. That's one argument. The other argument is the political argument, which is actually it will hurt Trump. The idea that it won't hurt Trump, the idea that Trump wants to go into the next election, having been one of only three men in human history to be impeached by the House of Representatives, is absurd. There's no scenario in which the most thin-skinned, narcissistic, egomaniacal, megalomaniacal individual in the United States of America right now, who's obsessed with comparing himself to Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan and others, is going to be okay about being impeached, or that won't harm him. And the idea that Nancy Pelosi says we get this done in a rush, A, that doesn't deal with the moral question of why you're leaving out all these other crimes, high crimes and misdemeanors he's committed, and it doesn't deal with the political question, which is if you get this done by November, then what? What, you've got a party to go to? You've got hair to wash? What is the rush? You're going to get back to legislating? Nancy Pelosi knows better than you and I do, Sam, that her bills are stuck in the Senate. The same Senate that's going to vote down impeachment is also not passing any of her bills.
Yeah, I would add actually a 2-A to the political calculation you're making, because once you force a vote on impeachment, it's basically everybody is declared. I'm either protecting Donald Trump or I'm out to hold him to account. And that is something that the Democrats have always had trouble doing, is nationalizing congressional races and senatorial races. And this seems to me to be a perfect way to nationalize all these races. You go in, it's very quite simple. This guy voted to protect Donald Trump, and you choose voter.
It's simple for you and I, Sam, and it's simple for a lot of voters. It's not simple for a lot of the Democratic political elites. That's the reality. The reality is that you have senators like Dianne Feinstein saying, well, do I want to lose Susan Collins from the Senate? She's literally said that openly, on the record. An absurd statement to make for Senator Susan Collins, who, thanks to her, Brett Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court. You have Joe Biden. Recent reporting has revealed that Joe Biden said to Mitch McConnell, we hope to see you back, Mitch. We want to see you get... You know, he said that, Biden. So when you have leading members of the Democratic Party saying, you know what, we're kind of okay with our Republican colleagues. We dine together. We go to the gym together. We're pals. When you have Kamala Harris even standing on the debate stage the other day referring to, quote, the late, great John McCain, which I think is an absurd statement to make about a former Republican presidential candidate who for his entire life until that healthcare vote voted against Democratic Party interests again and again and again. When you have that kind of mindset at the top of the party, yeah, it sounds easy in theory for you and I to say it's obvious this is the political move to make. But Democrats don't like wielding power, and they don't like, as you say, nationalizing races and really kind of putting their opponents under pressure. That's why we're not seeing an across-the-board impeachment. That's why up until Tuesday, 4 p.m., Nancy Pelosi, the most she'd ever done, you know, to take on Trump and censure him for his ridiculous conduct was, you know, some strongly worded tweets and some threats from a podium, but not actually any kind of censure on the floor of a body that she controls.
Have you run into anybody, yourself or anybody who's done any reporting that can, that has at least articulated a strategy of impeaching quickly? Like, it just seems to me that, like, once you've impeached, you're going to pay the price. You might as well, if you think that's the idea, like you're going to pay a price, you might as well get something out of it. I mean, do they think that it will, like, if they impeach and it's not like it doesn't go to April or something, that somehow it's going to demotivate Republican voters? I don't quite get it. What is the theory, though, that, like, if we get impeachment over quickly, the pain that we will feel from impeachment will go away, even if we vote to impeach him? Like, I don't understand what the theory is.
I don't think they've thought that far ahead. I think they've just thought about internal party unity. But what my understanding is that there are these kind of frontline Democrats. There are these Democrats in swing seats who won Republican seats in 2018 who have always been nervous about impeachment. And this is the only issue that will get them on board, because it's a national security issue. It's an international issue. You know, the Democrats love to get behind national security consensus. And this is seen as Trump, you know, undermining American national security and foreign policy. And therefore, this is the issue that they'll come on board for. They won't come on board for, you know, naked corruption or campaign finance violations or blatant obstruction of justice, 10 cases laid out in the Mueller report. But for this, they will. And it's for the sake of party unity that Nancy Pelosi will get behind and do this vote. It's clean. It's easy. It's a unique issue. They think it's easily understandable, by the way. Steny Hoyer has said on the record, this is easy to understand. Debbie Dingell from Michigan, Pelosi ally in the leadership, has said, this is easy to understand, which I find, A, kind of patronizing. The idea that, you know, voters only understand this and they don't understand, you know, hush money paid to Stormy Daniels. They don't understand Trump enriching himself at the taxpayers' expense. I think that's far easier to understand. And also, this idea that, you know, the story itself is that easy to understand. I would argue, yes, you know, in the big picture, yes. But once you start, the Republicans start, you know, throwing crap against the wall in terms of Hunter Biden, you know, it's going to muddy the water. People at home who don't follow this stuff closely, you know, I worry that they will hear, you know, Democrats saying this about Trump and the president. They'll hear Republicans talking about Hunter Biden, the prosecutor, and they might both sides it, which is a slight worry. I mean, it's a small worry. I don't think it's that big a worry, but it's weird to say we can't impeach him on other issues because they're more complicated. How is it complicated to say that Trump obstructed justice? How is it complicated to say that the vice president of the United States just spent $600,000 of taxpayers' money on limos driving from Trump's golf course in Ireland, where he decided to stay, instead of the capital of the country?
Well, and we also now have reports that Richard Neal, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, has been sitting on another whistleblower report from, we don't know exactly whom, but someone probably in the IRS, that Donald Trump has been interfering with the IRS audit of his taxes, or something to that effect. I mean, we don't know exactly. Neal is also the guy, I'll remind people, that refused essentially to get Donald Trump's taxes from New York State, who had voted a law to basically provide it for him. And why wouldn't you say, like, wait a second, before we exhaust impeachment, because we can't impeach him twice, that's never going to happen, shouldn't we also, like, hear from this whistleblower? And I mean, for the life of me, I don't even understand what these frontline Democrats, why they think they can impeach in November and people are going to forget 8 months later or something. And you know, I understand the idea for party unity and that maybe the entire party, 230 people, have to move somewhere because of the seven that they're talking about. But if Donald Trump realizes that, like, hey, I got impeached and nothing happened, what does he do then?
He also has like a year. If you get done and dusted with this in November, just from a pure political point of view, you give him a year to rewrite the narrative and talk his nonsense as he has done post-Mueller. And the idea that you wouldn't keep him on the defensive, you wouldn't be demanding documents, you wouldn't be subpoenaing witnesses, you wouldn't be holding televised hearings, it's absurd. I mean, the damage that was done to Nixon was over the course of a year. In the early 70s, between the Senate Watergate Committee setting up and between the House Judiciary Committee drafting articles of impeachment. By the way, just on a historical point, a lot of people aren't aware of this. There were three articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon, which were passed. There were two others that didn't pass. One of them was related to the bombing of Cambodia. So, yes, the House Democrats at the time did decide to bring in other things other than Watergate into that impeachment hearings. And their articles of impeachment themselves were pretty detailed and lengthy. In terms of Andrew Johnson, the first president to ever be impeached, 11 articles of impeachment were brought against him by the House of Representatives. The idea that you have to keep this clean and narrow is ahistorical. We haven't done this very often. The United States has not done impeachment very often, and when they have, it hasn't been in this way. So there's no exactly precedent for what Pelosi and co. are doing. And I just think it's madness to kind of, the Congress has these powers. Why are you unilaterally disarming? And remember, Nancy Pelosi, Sam, was the one telling us until very recently he wants to be impeached, which I think is the most ridiculous conspiracy theory of our time. He's goading us into impeaching him, she said at a public event a few months ago. The idea that Donald Trump wants to be impeached was absurd then. It's definitely absurd now when you look at his Twitter feed and see how he's using it.
Well, you can also see that they have basically sent out an army of about 30 lawyers to challenge everything in the courts and tie it all up. She also said at one point on national television that if we impeach him, then he can't be indicted when he leaves office, which is categorically, not only categorically untrue, I think like literally in the impeachment, I can't remember what article it is in the Constitution, but it says literally that you can be.
And Robert Mueller has said that. Don't forget, by the way, Robert Mueller, let's go back to this Ukraine court. Robert Mueller said on the 24th of July in Congress that he could be indicted after he's left office.
Yep.
That night, that evening, the Democrats took no steps to turn Mueller's testimony into any kind of censure or impeachment articles. The very next day, the 25th of July, Donald Trump, who thinks, hey, nothing can happen to me, even after Mueller testifies, makes the call to the Ukrainians.
Right. And, you know, I also find it hard to believe that if he's leveraging, if he's willing to do this with Ukraine, why would anyone assume like this is his one little weakness? He likes to leverage the government to benefit himself, but only with Ukraine. With everybody else, he's absolutely by the book. That's the one thing about
as we now know about this, the latest stuff is the power of just calling for impeachment. We've seen documents handed over. We've seen evidence now, not just of the abuse of power, but the cover-up, this idea that they've taken this transcript and put it in a place where you're not supposed to put it with highly sensitive intelligence material, which a lot of legal experts are saying is evidence of a cover-up, of a concealment, of breaking the law. If he's done it for this one call, you're telling me there's not dozens of other transcripts of dozens of other calls knocking about? How are you going to get them if you rush through impeachment by November? These things take time. Go get the documents. Do the digging. The Republicans had no story in Benghazi, and yet they went on for years holding hearings, costing the taxpayers millions of dollars, investigating again and again. After eight investigations, they still set up the House Benghazi Committee to go after Hillary Clinton. And they never found any dirt on her, but they did some serious damage to her reputation ahead of a presidential campaign.
Well,
in this case, you could actually damage Trump's reputation and find actual dirt.
It was the sixth, I think, investigation of Benghazi where they came up with the email server, frankly. All right. Well, let me ask you just, I know we don't have too much time left here, but let me just ask you a couple of specifics here. Bill Barr, this complaint went to the Department of Justice, the OLC, and they decided no, there's nothing, there's no there, and dismissed it out of hand. It seems to me that Bill Barr, in addition to everybody who basically conspired to take this call and immediately bury it in the most sensitive, essentially safe that the U.S. government has, are involved in a cover up. I mean, to what extent do you think that the Democrats should be bringing in Bill Barr, or at least, you know, this is a problem.
Yeah. And this is the Bill Barr who, when he was appointed, a lot of sensible people did point out that he was going to be Donald Trump's Roy Cohn, this personal corrupt lawyer that Donald Trump had employed in the 80s. He's always wanted his own Roy Cohn, and he didn't think Jeff Sessions was that person. He finally got that person in Bill Barr. We've seen it in the Mueller report in terms of the way he kind of spun that and misled people around the Mueller report. We've seen that in terms of, by the way, his testimony in Congress where he dodged the question about whether he'd opened investigations into anyone on Trump's request. We now know from the phone call summary, it's not a transcript, that he was asked to do so by the president. The New York Times, Michelle Goldberg did an op-ed today, which is headlined, "Just How Corrupt is Bill Barr?" And the answer is very, very, very corrupt. And the Democrats need to be shouting this from the rooftops, that the DOJ is no longer independent if it ever was. And the Attorney General is corrupt, and he should be impeached as well. At the very minimum, he should be demanded to recuse himself from this. The idea that the whistleblower goes to the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community and says, hey, I've got a complaint about Donald Trump having improper conversations with the foreign government, which involved the Attorney General. And then the DOJ, led by the Attorney General, says, yeah, we're not allowing you to send this complaint to Congress. I mean, how is that not a massive conflict? How can anyone, even the most loyal right-wing Republican, with a straight face, justify that?
And people should understand, I mean, the moment that Bill Barr came out and basically did his version of Ilhan Omar and the squad should go back to where they came from, and he followed that up in a much more sort of, I guess, dignified manner in which he articulated it. People need to understand that leaving Bill Barr unscathed is highly problematic, because if you're one of those people who thinks that Donald Trump may not be so easily quick to leave office, even if he loses, it's all going to be a function of whether Bill Barr ties it up. And if Bill Barr is left, his reputation is continued to be unsullied, and there's no attempt to sort of, you know, dig into what this guy's been doing as a Roy Cohn for Trump. I think it's going to be highly problematic. All right, let me ask you another question.
But just very quickly on Barr, people aren't aware of this. This is not his first rodeo.
Right.
He served under George H.W. Bush and helped him cover up Iran-Contra and hand out a bunch of pardons to people who were going to basically implicate George H.W. Bush in the Iran-Contra affair. So he's done this before. He's been covering up stuff in Washington, D.C. for decades.
What is going on with Volcker? What do you know about Kurt Volcker? I mean, Kurt Volcker is the guy that, was the ambassador to Ukraine. He is the guy who Giuliani seems to be trying to argue somehow it's exculpatory for him that he was invited to go by the State Department to deal with Ukraine. It sort of begs the question, like, why is the State Department doing this? But Volcker apparently is unpaid. Were you aware that he is like a liaison there who is apparently unpaid, who has, he's just a guy who apparently is doing the U.S. State Department a favor.
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me, Sam, because all of these figures in all of these circles, I mean, what are they doing there? Volcker, Giuliani. I mean, the Rudy Giuliani story won't go down as one of the most amazing stories of this presidency in terms of is his big mouth and erratic behavior and brazen lying regularly on live TV. Is that what's going to screw over Trump in the long run? Every time he opens his mouth, it seems like he does some kind of damage. But I know there's a theory circulating in some circles that, you know, they want him out there distracting and taking hits, but I'm not sure I buy that because he's so unpredictable and so unhinged. This guy was once mayor of New York and seen as a serious Republican presidential candidate. And I think all of these people in Trump's orbit, all of these people floating around Ukraine, they all need to be investigated. They all need to be put on the record. I think Chris Hayes tweeted that last night. You know, get all these people, subpoena them, put them under oath, ask them these questions. That takes time. I hope they have the time to do that. As you said just now, the sixth Benghazi hearing found the email server. Who knows what you're going to find when you start? You know, most of us didn't know who Kurt Volcker even existed until 24, 36 hours ago. So how many other people are out there who we don't know exist? But we know that, you know, Trump employs all sorts of people. Trump's fixers employ all sorts of people. Now we know the State Department, Mike Pompeo, is involved in all this. I mean, I can't even follow, to be honest. I'll tell you, listeners, clearly, I can't even follow all the links here. It's so ridiculous. I mean, I saw Giuliani waving, posting a text from the State Department today, a part of his ongoing row with the State Department about what his role was. This all has to be investigated and it has to be taken seriously. But my worry is that, you know, there's a rush. We even miss things on Ukraine. You know, best case scenario, you get impeachment on Ukraine and you say, okay, we impeached the president. Worst case scenario, you F up the entire Ukraine thing because the Democrats tend to F things up. I would like to see something more than both that best case and worst case scenario. As I say, I go back to the beginning of our conversation. I would like to see Trump held to account and impeached for torturing children at the border, for being involved with Michael Cohen in paying illegal hush money to Stormy Daniels on the eve of the election, which helped him get elected, for obstructing justice on 10 different occasions, as the Mueller report pointed out, for illegally trying to divert aid from Puerto Rico, where 3,000 Americans died, and diverting it to Texas and Louisiana. That's impeachable. For threatening to use the U.S. government to go after Amazon and the Washington Post. That's impeachable. I would like to see those things held up. There's no reason the Democrats can't do all of this. I don't buy that they can't do all of this. Of course they can.
I agree with you. Mehdi Hasan, Thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks. There you go. Contact your congresspeople. I mean, this is actually, you know, we've talked about, I've cited Ryan Grimm's reporting quite a bit over the past week. But the fact of the matter is, the reason why impeachment happened, it's hard to make a counterfactual. But even in the absence of this Ukraine stuff, we were moving towards impeachment because these frontline Democrats had heard when they went back from their constituents, you got to do this. And they made the calculation that if we don't do it, I'm going to lose these people. They're going to be depressed, essentially, and their morale is going to be low and they're not going to come out. They're not going to campaign for me, you know, because the people who show up at the town halls, those are the people you need. The Democrats who show up at your town hall, if you're a Democrat, you need those people not just to say, like, I'm going to vote for you. You need those people to phone bank for you, to get their friends to vote for you, to get their friends to come out and vote, to get their friends to come out and vote. You need those people. And when they show up at a town hall and say, not only am I not, like, I'm mad at you, it has an impact. And so you need to get out there. This is why primaries are effective, even if you like your congressperson. This is why being active is helpful. This is one of those moments where you contact your congressperson and you tell them to demand that Nancy Pelosi has a full and thorough investigation, hold Donald Trump to account, not only on Ukraine, but on everything else. And not only hold Donald Trump to account, Bill Barr, Mike Pompeo, Rudy Giuliani, and that's, you know, four asks, a thorough and complete investigation, one that it goes beyond Ukraine and includes Giuliani, Pompeo, and Bill Barr. Because again, you know, like, it's going to be Bill Barr who the newscasters on November 9th, after Donald Trump loses the election, God willing, who comes out and says, well, there's been discrepancies and we are filing a motion to the Supreme Court to enjoin the announcement of the, I mean, this is how it's going to go down.
It's definitely going to happen. And this is also somebody who is just, you know, I guess I shouldn't put words in his mouth, but I mean, this is the famous Nixon line that everybody grew up with is like, this is not how it's supposed to be, where it's like, if the president does it, it's not illegal. In right. The Frost Nixon interviews. That's what Bill Barr thinks. Clearly. Even beyond Trump,
I think
this is
true.
Pure Dick Cheney, unitary executive combined with being a, you know, a consigliere for a lunatic criminal.
And if Bill Barr's involvement in things like this is not described to the public, if the public does not have any education on who Bill Barr is and they just think, oh, he's the attorney general. Not he's the attorney general who quashed this whistleblower complaint. Not he's the attorney general who mischaracterized the Mueller report. If they don't see him as the partisan hack that he is, it's going to be that much harder to disregard what Bill Barr is saying on the day that he decides, like, well, Donald Trump needs to won the election.
Right. Exactly. I want it to be broader in scope for both normative and strategic reasons, but it's just for all the reasons you're outlining. Like, you need to delegitimize all of them. Because they're all legitimate. It's not like an extra job you have to do. You just literally need to expose the guy who is clearly willing to do anything.
It really is inexplicable to me what this is what I think is problematic about the Democratic leadership, in my estimation. It's not that there is, it's not a disagreement in strategy. It's that they don't seem to have one. There's no articulation of a strategy. Like, there's this vague sort of attempt to have a tactic Well, if you're going to force us to do impeachment, then we've got to make it as quick as possible. And I guess, I'm trying to.
You know for a fact, honestly, like, let's game this out. It's going to fail in the Senate. So the first argument, which is just true, is that
it's quite possibly, it may not even get to the Senate.
So why not you take the whole months, if you're going to do it, you made the decision, you took the decision, dine out on it for months. Every day a new embarrassment, every day a new request, every day a new humiliation, every day a new fine, every day a new threat.
Yep.
I mean, I don't understand. It's like, I'm gonna hit a forehand and approach the net. I'm gonna stop at midcourt.
Right, exactly. That is, people who play tennis. You're in no man's land. In other words, folks, once you decide to cross the street, you better have a little pep to your step because you don't want to get hit by a truck.
Yeah, no half measures.
And it's just stunning. And so they're going to go on vacation. If you have the opportunity, drop by and make it one of those learning vacations. What do you call those?
Educational trips. I don't know.
Maybe I'm thinking.
You bring them over, Glove.
Exactly.
And you tell them to learn.
Honestly, it's just, it's like there's some type of competition between Pelosi and Schumer. We're like, well, let me see if I can't do something that makes less sense.
Well, how about this? You're doing impeachment hearings. I'm demanding an investigation of the coupon industry.
Exactly. The irony is, of course, that Mitch McConnell has been holding up this cannabis bill. Yeah, I'll talk about it in the context of this, because the other argument is that, like, well, we need to show the American public that we're getting their work done, which, of course, they passed all these bills in the first 6 months of a Democratic House and nobody knows it. I can tell you right now, I do this professionally and I can't tell you more than 4 or 5 of the bills.
I have a question about that. Why can't the DNC put out an expenditure and lay out some consulting contracts, which they love to just do like PSAs? Like, this is what your Democratic House has done in the last year. We passed this bill on voting rights. We passed this bill on this. We passed this bill on that. And do some national or targeted ads.
Yeah, buy some ads on lefty YouTube shows. I mean, honestly. Right.
That too. Why not?
They don't do it because I think on some level they realize, like, nobody really cares. And it, I imagine what it is it's an opportunity for all of the incumbents to go into the election saying, I voted for blankety blank. I voted for blankety blank. My opponent disagrees against it. I mean, they're so afraid of nationalizing the election that I think that's why they don't even bring that up, because they want their members to be able to pick and choose which ones they emphasize.
You know, some guy in the just like, excuse me, there's some of the members of the caucus who voted for more pathogens in the food.
So on Wednesday, two days ago, the House passed, and I think there was something like, 90 Democrats, I mean, Republicans even, joined the Democrats to pass a bill that would allow legalized marijuana businesses to have access to banking services. People may not be aware of this, but I don't know how many states we now have with legal marijuana. A dozen, half a dozen. It's become rather uncontroversial, except for New York, for some ungodly reason. It was 91 Republicans, 229 Democrats. Including now, if you go to a marijuana dispensary in a state where it is totally legal to buy marijuana, they take your money, and they only can do it in one of two ways. One, they can take it as cash, and they have massive stores of cash in these facilities. Or what I understand they do in a place like Las Vegas is they actually sell gift cards. And so when you go up with your credit card, you buy a gift card, and then they use the gift card to redeem to get your pot. And they do this because the banking system will not take and allow for credit or do any credit card transactions if you are involved in selling marijuana because of federal law. And so they have not had access to banking. So what it does, it creates a little bit of a problem, right? There's a lot of cash there. It's rather inefficient. And you have 229 Democrats, 91 Republicans on Wednesday voted for this cannabis banking bill. And it took months to get Republican support. Months. And I think there's two things that you can learn from this. One is that obviously the stuff, pot has no longer, like, it's lost all of its salience as a cultural issue for conservatives in this country. And two, that if impeachment is having any impact on the ability of lawmakers to make law, it is helping. Because everybody, I think, is scrambling to be like, I want to be doing something if I'm a Republican. Now, I don't know. Mitch McConnell may be holding it up. But the idea that somehow you cannot, you've got more laws passed. You got your first bipartisan bill. And it came after impeachment was announced. It just makes no sense whatsoever to me. It makes no sense. The thinking here, articulate an idea, but they're not doing it. All right. Oh, shoot. Folks, the AM Quickie is live. It's live on its own feed. We were supposed to do this at the beginning of the show. So there's two things that we're going to talk about. First is, if you go to amquickie.com, can we put this up on the amquickie.com? We put it up as a Chyron. Amquickie.com will redirect. It will redirect to our Fans FM AM Quickie. There it is. You can subscribe with your on iTunes, your Mac, your PC. You can subscribe with your podcast app on your iPhone, or you can copy and paste that feed into your podcast app. Let's say it's, Overcast or Pocket Kickass or Pocket Pods or Pod Pockets. Whatever you do it on.
Pod Pockets is good. So much wrong with that.
It will be on Stitcher within a couple of days. But go sign up for this right now. We will keep it on the feed for another couple of days on both the members and the non-members feed. But then it will live on its own. The AM Quickie. And for, when impeachment starts going up, even if it lasts for like a week, you're going to want to, we're going to try and do our best to give you just like, the quick top line story. So you have a vague notion of what is going down. And by vague, I mean probably more of a notion of what's going down than the vast majority of people you walk around with. But from my perspective, it's vague. We do a 3-hour show every day, 2.5-hour show. But it is just and we're getting it out earlier and earlier every day. AM Quickie, we got the first one is up there, right there. And we try and put links in there too for all the stories that we do. And, so check it out, the AM Quickie. Tell your friends about it. And boom. All right. Yeah. Looks good, right? That's a nice looking
pretty
logo.
Little logo there.
I like it. The AM Quickie, ladies and gentlemen. Also, I had promised today we would be doing a little bit of a rundown on Steven Crowder. I've been teasing this for some time that Steven Crowder, in two separate occasions, has literally ended his participation in a forum to avoid debating with me. But it's easy for me to get here, come here and say this. But on Wednesday of next week, because I will be gone for the Rosh Hashanah, on Wednesday of next week, I will show you. I won't just say it. I will show you. So, Stephen, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy Rosh Hashanah. It's a new year. As they say on Rosh Hashanah, it is written. On Yom Kippur, it is sealed. And so during this period of time, I will forgive you. That is what I will do. I will forgive you during that period.
You give him the chance to atone. That's what it's all about, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And so we will do that next week. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking quite a bit about the hearing yesterday. We'll talk a little bit more about impeachment. We've got some other stuff here too, as well, of course. See you. Oh, wait. What am I talking about? Don't forget, you can support the show by becoming a member at majority.fm. I'm completely sleep deprived, I think. Yes. The impeachment stuff has got me going quite a bit. You can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Check it out. Just pennies a day. Also, justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and get 10% off. Don't forget to sign up for the AM Quickie. And also, today is Friday, which means that Tuesday must have happened already. It happened. But take your foot off.
Oh, sorry, guys. I'm really tired. Michaela Milk. I'm Michaela becoming Milk. You. Michaela Wilkes is running for Congress against Steny Hoyer. She's really great. We talked to her. Then we had an incredibly fun time with Mike Racine, including reminding everybody about the Jeffrey Epstein story. So patreon.com/TMBS, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Get your tickets to the Philly Live Show. And really quick, October 6th, I'm going to MC an event called Comedy for All, a socialist social with Lauren Ashcroft, who is running for Congress and is a DSA person and a stand-up comedian. So she's actually going to give her stump and tell some jokes. And that is at Catch Astoria. So check out the event, and let's try to...
Where is it at?
Catch Astoria. It's in Astoria.
Catch Astoria?
K-A-T-C-H Astoria.
Oh, okay.
And
you used to have a club called Catch a Rising Star.
Yeah, it's Manhattan,
people
just
refer to it as Catch.
And
sometimes we Catch Manhattan, but Catch Astoria does not sound like that.
Catch Astoria. Primaries are good, and primaries by legit leftists who are also funny are even better. So see you there, and see you in Philly.
Keep that in mind, Chuck Schumer.
There you go.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, we speak with Novara Media's Aaron Bastani about his great new book, Fully Automated Luxury Communism, interrogate exactly what he means by that, and go through some of the critiques that have been leveled as well. Also out today, we have a bonus for our patrons edited together from Andy's appearance on our friend Corey Pine's podcast, News from Nowhere. They talk about Tom DeLonge's To the Stars Academy and what's up with that. The Navy's admission that the videos of UFOs are in fact real. And then they discuss Posadism. Corey interviews Andy a little bit about this wacky ideology that Andy's writing a book about. And they finish it out with an essay on Blink-182's song, Aliens Exist. So check it out,
there
folks.
There you go.
Oh, also our live show is still October 12th at Littlefield NYC. Get your tickets.
We got a link at majority.fm.
Indeed.
October 12th. Got my whole social calendar is getting filled up now. Look at that. Matt is off somewhere. I don't know where he is. Just sabotaging the sound and the phones from afar.
Yeah, I think he went to a voodoo doctor down in New Orleans and was like, I want to sabotage a podcast.
Well, there you have
it. Oh, now I
brought a microphone with him.
I'm even more envious now.
But you can
still waters run deep.
Check out Literary Hangover at patreon.com/literary hangover. All right, quick break, fun half.